the compost bin, I like to say, changed my life. I came into my parents' place and they had been gone for a couple of days. When I found this compost bin that was just so disgusting, I could smell it as soon as I walked into the kitchen. I looked over, I opened the lid, and there must have been, you know, hundreds of fruit flies that were in this thing. And they coated this white cabinetry that my dad had built. And I remember thinking I should really, you know, do something, but I was so fascinated by just the sheer number of fruit flies that were in his kitchen. You know, taking that bin out that day, I thought, like, what a rough introduction for sustainability for so many people, that they're told they have to do this behavior. They're not educated well on why. They're not educated well on how they could do it for themselves and their own gardens. They have to pay for it to come and be picked up. And then, you know, on top of that, they're not educated on how to manage the food waste within their own home so that they don't deal with these, you know, unpleasant side effects of the whole process of food waste diversion, of fruit flies, of smells.
This is A Sustainable Mind, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Taylor McCartan is the co-founder and CEO of BinBreeze, the world's first non-toxic and all-natural composting powder. A University of Victoria graduate, Taylor created BinBreeze as he was finishing his MBA. He went on to appear on season 15 of CBC's Dragon's Den with his product and successfully teamed up with dragon Arlene Dickinson. BinBreeze is now in over 500 retail locations across Canada and counting. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Marjorie. I'm honored.
So I am so excited to dig into a bit of the science, but also some of the business aspects of exactly how you got BinBreeze to where it is right now. But we're going to start this interview off learning a little bit more about you and your background. So let's start off talking about how nature, the environment, and sustainability played a role in your childhood growing up. Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. My passion for sustainability is without a doubt because of my family. My mother's father was an immigrant from Hungary who fled communism in the 60s. And he traveled all the way here across Canada, all the way to Victoria, BC on the West Coast, where he met my grandmother. And he worked as a carpenter and a tradesman here. And he purchased 2 acres of forest from the government, which I can now acknowledge had in fact been stolen from the Songhees Nation a century before. Mm. And he built a house and a great big workshop there. And as his grandson, a child, I spent my weekends with my cousins playing in the natural forest all around this property. And they lived as they had learned to live in the old country. So they grew fruit, vegetables, they raised chickens and ducks and other animals, and they composted everything and jarred or canned everything else. And they really specialized in nothing, but very little went to waste. And this is pretty much mostly because of my grandfather, who was actually kind of a religious man, and told me one day that he believed that God had left Adam and Eve in Eden, and that he had to earn his place in heaven by respecting and living alongside the land. And so that, you know, while I'm personally agnostic, that really stuck with me, and the bounty that the land and the garden and the soil could provide and how much we rely on it as human beings. And to be quite honest, at the time, I pretty much just wanted to play Pokemon, but that was an experience that I wish so many more people could have, not the religious stuff, but the actually growing your own food and fruit and understanding that your phone and computer and clothing all came from the environment, and that we owe everything, every sip of water and breath of air. You know, we need the environment and it needs us.
Amazing, amazing. That is such an awesome family history there. And also, I totally am with you about the importance of being a steward of the land. And that's something that I'm thinking about constantly, is how do I bring my current interests and talents to this piece of land that's been passed down generation to generation, but obviously still do right by it in terms of the environmental impact, or hopefully giving something back to the environment, whatever that happens to look like. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
So I want to know a little bit more about how you got into BinBreeze, but starting, you mentioned that one thing that happened on your family farm growing up was that there was composting going on. They composted anything and everything that they did not actually consume. Was there anything about that experience growing up that led to, or did you find anything particularly interesting about the composting process? Was there anything interesting that you learned, or were there any challenges that you're like, there's probably a better way to take care of that?
No, absolutely, 100%. Well, the first thing is that generally when it came to food waste and food scraps, they actually got fed to the animals before they got composted, which is a more ecologically friendly and sustainable practice, is to have that food go to animals before composting. Obviously, it's better to compost before the landfill. But from that composting side, we did use wood dust, which my grandfather is a carpenter, and my father, who met my mother, let's say, through a boss's daughter situation. Basically, you know, they both grew up, I grew up on the job site sweeping up wood dust. And that wood dust often, you know, would either get burnt, which was generally the way of disposing it. And occasionally we would end up composting it alongside other, you know, organics that were pulled from the farm. So it wasn't actually really until much later in my 20s that I learned about the actual environmental impact of burning wood. And that really changed my whole world and made me realize that this wood that we burn, you know, millions of tons of every year for disposal actually has a worse environmental impact than coal or natural gas or gas, in the sense that it's actually just putting more particulate into the atmosphere and causing more health, public health issues. And most importantly, we're not really gaining anything from burning it up. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me that we're investing so heavily in things like carbon credits when we're burning wood for disposal. But all of this, you know, came together in my mind to make an easier practice using that wood dust for composting. And that was really the extent of my personal innovation. I just had the idea to use wood waste as a base for an food waste additive. And it was actually a scientist that I met at the University of Victoria who I paid a little bit of money to look at my first research and came back to me and said he wanted to co-found the company with me. That was, you know, one of the huge moments for us. He's still to this day, one of my closest co-founders, Harman. And I wouldn't be here without him, that's for sure.
Amazing. So I want to actually get into some of the science behind Bin Breeze and how it works. Obviously, don't want you to give away any trade secrets or anything, but...
No, we're patented now, so I can talk.
Fantastic. So can you go into kind of the basic elements, whatever the ingredients are that make it up,
sure,
and kind of what each one does or the role that it plays in the breakdown process?
Sure. There is definitely like some things that they do together. So, and things that multiple materials are doing, but I'll try and explain this for as simply as possible. But basically we mill the wood dust and we combine it with a very common gardening ingredient, a fossil algae called diatomaceous earth, which is actually fossilized natural freshwater sea organisms, or, you know, diatoms, algae. And basically, we mix the algae and the wood dust together with another very extremely porous mineral that's got very unique properties for holding on to molecules and filtering and generally retaining nutrients for later use for plant life. And we mill these three ingredients together. And then depending on, you know, what scent you're particularly looking for your compost bin, like if you would like your compost bin not to smell like anything, you can get unscented. Whereas if you'd like it to smell nice or pleasant, you can get you know, like a lavender scented or eucalyptus is what something we're coming out with soon, basically. And so from a scientific perspective, we're doing several things. The way that customers are using the product is that they're applying it in their kitchen compost bin on top of their food waste, like immediately after they make a deposit. And what's that doing is it's soaking up the moisture, excess moisture that's in that food waste, and slowing the process of rot. So instead of getting that, it's actually digestion, we're getting decomposition, a healthy aerobic decomposition. We're adding airflow, carbon, and generally these extremely porous minerals that allow, you know, more movement within the material and create the conditions for the right kind of microbial life that we want to create in there that isn't going to stink up your kitchen. We are also simultaneously via this algae creating a mechanical action for the dehydration of insects that have exoskeletons. So we're not harming any worms or any those very positive insects that should be part of the composting process, but you wouldn't necessarily want in your house.
Right.
We're only dealing with the fruit flies at that surface level. And the beauty of it is that the material's been, like, the whole formula has really been designed specifically with the composting facility in mind to make a better soil. And that's where I think we're really different from other companies operating the space that are very much focused on just putting a product out that people will buy. we're actually trying to take that systems view and make a better soil result for that end user and the farmer that's eventually going to grow food with it, as opposed to just, you know, trying to sell something that's going to end up getting, having to get removed from the composting system later on.
Right. Yeah, that's a great holistic perspective, and you guys are definitely taking into account.
Yeah, yeah.
I do want to ask about the like application of this product. So it, your bio mentions 500, over 500 retail locations. So is this for the at home, just a personal use at home? Is this something that people use at like, you know, food retail fronts? Or I guess you wouldn't consider them retail fronts, but like what level of user is there really?
Great question, Marjorie. Totally. So there's actually multiple levels. And that's something that obviously we've been very happy to discover bringing the product to market, because I was so focused on just making food waste diversion easier for consumers and trying to create a positive relationship there that I didn't really look at the broader industry until now. I have these amazing brains on my team who have identified those opportunities. And basically we're encountering product market fit in the restaurant and hospitality industries. We're actually working with composting facilities themselves and applying bin breeze onto their outdoor windrows to cut the VOC emissions from those windrows so that surrounding the neighborhood doesn't have to smell the compost, or, and actually it reduces the methane directly that's being produced by that decomposition process. But more generally, I think, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about now is using bin breeze as a method of pushing hospitality into the food waste diversion industry, largely because we can actually deal with their fruit fly problem that's occurring in their restaurant if they separate their food waste. Whereas if they're continuing to put their fruit waste in the garbage, they're going to continue to get fruit flies in their operation. So that's been really exciting because I get to do so much positive good there for the environment and also encourage, you know, composting. And then the other big one that I'm really excited about right now is that COVID has shifted where food waste is being produced, in that a lot more is being made at home and a lot less at the office. But the trucks that go and pick up the organic waste from most landlords are on a recurring schedule. And so they go and pick up an empty bin if they have to. And so by having a chemical composition like bin breeze that is able to stabilize the food for longer periods of time, we can reduce the frequency of the pickup, which saves the landlord money, saves the environment, greenhouse gas emissions, and actually makes a faster turning over operational compost for the end facility that is able to store it on site for a lower period of time. So these are all systemic benefits that have emerged purely because from the beginning, we looked at creating something for the whole system rather than just hyper-focusing on, you know, the consumer's fruit fly problem and selling a fruit fly trap or something like that.
That last point you mentioned about adding it to the management of an apartment building, for instance, so that you can decrease the number of pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Does that result at all in, say, a messier pickup, or is like the landlord going to have to deal with any additional residual stuff on the inside because it sat for there longer? I'm just, when you said that, I was thinking from like a landlord perspective, what would be the implications there?
Yeah, those are really great questions. You know, it's an amazing thing, but the vessels that hold that food waste, the big steel containers, it becomes so acidic inside the material that it actually burns through the steel. And so it's a very expensive container. And if you're not managing the food waste in an effective way, you can create that acidity. So right now the status quo is, you know, throw in whatever the hell people have wasted from their food waste and then hope for the best. There's not really any actual chemical management that's being taken place. And that's largely because the whole thing has been put in place by the same people that they're haulers, they're waste haulers. That's what they know to do, is to take it away. And there's not like a scientist looking at that material and saying, hey, well, actually I can stabilize this and make it so that you won't get fruit flies and stink in your environment and inside your building. And it's more efficient. It's just like, no one's really looked at it yet. And that's what, you know, that's, I feel like what every entrepreneur is kind of shocked by with the first time they encounter a gap. Yeah. Is why is no one doing this yet? And that's a good sign to proceed.
yeah, absolutely. So this is actually a good segue, because I want to now go back and talk a bit more about the business aspects. And before we even got started with the interview, it was so clear to me, just in our, you know, welcoming conversation, that you are incredibly passionate about environmental issues. And so I'm interested in knowing how you came up with the idea for Ben Breeze. But I mean, like, from a, how did you act? Like, what was the trigger? What was the idea? How did that process come to be in your mind over time?
Yeah. Well, there it is. I do tell a much more condensed story than reality and the, you know, the guest test refine and the different ingredients. Like, we looked at hundreds of different minerals and things like that. But I think to answer your question, like, what was the real catalyst? It was the compost bin, I like to say, changed my life. Mm-hmm. I came into my parents' place and they had been gone for a couple days. I was moving back home because I was going to go to UVic up the road. And I said I was. And they had a spare room. And so I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. And basically, anyway, one day I came home and I found this compost bin that was just so disgusting. I could smell it as soon as I walked into the kitchen. I looked over, I opened the lid, and there must have been, you know, hundreds of fruit flies that were in this thing. And they coated this white cabinetry that my dad had built. And I remember thinking I should really, you know, do something, but I was so fascinated by just the sheer number of fruit flies that were in his kitchen. And I thought, you know, taking that bin out that day, I thought, like, what a rough introduction for sustainability for so many people that they're told they have to do this behavior. They're not educated well on why. They're not educated well on how they could do it for themselves and their own gardens. They have to pay for it to come and be picked up. And then, you know, on top of that, they're not educated on how to manage the food waste within their own home so that they don't deal with these, you know, unpleasant side effects of the whole process of food waste diversion, of fruit flies, of smells. And so that moment, that really stuck with me. Like, this is an area where if I can make sustainability, or I can make composting easier for people, I can create value and also be doing good for the planet. And so that really colored my thoughts. I spent a while, like a few months, thinking about compost bins and learning about the chemistry of food waste and what our food waste generally is made up of and what happens to it over time. And then that was the moment that I kind of had this eureka, because I was reading an article about how more wood waste was produced on Vancouver Island that year than garbage.
Wow.
And so I thought, wow, like, that is so much wood waste. We cannot be putting that into the atmosphere. We need to find ways that sequester it that aren't burning. You know, because obviously, like, the number one use of wood waste generally is the pellet industry, which now has a greater environmental impact than a cannabis forest can even absorb. So we really need to find solutions that put carbon back into the soil. And that's really what I was trying to create. But I, at the end of the day, I guess it was all just about making composting less gross.
Yeah, that's actually a really good billboard. Because, I mean, it's true. Compost is gross. And I personally have been in households with, you know, roommates and it was their compost pile, or staying with friends and it was their compost pile. And they're always asking me questions. So is this normal? And I feel your pain there.
You know, as a bachelor now, I'm using a compost bin at home, but it takes me a very long time to fill it up.
Yeah.
And the amount of time that it's in my home it's going to start decomposing faster than I'll be able to take it out. Mm-hmm. And so I needed something to extend that period of time where I could fill the bin completely, take it out when it was full, and not have to deal with unpleasantness just because I've eaten out last night, you know? And so stabilizing it just makes total sense to me. And yeah, that's really what we're trying to do.
Well, you know, I just did a quick search live here while I'm supposed to be hosting a show. And it does not okay. Seem like your website has the term black soldier fly anywhere on it. But what I will say is that I would say at least half of the people that I personally know that have issues with their compost have a black soldier fly issue. Is that something that can be an issue with the Ben Breeze product, or what do you know about that? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, actually, there's like, it's really interesting if you do some research for that, because there's entire industries built around black soldier flies and the larva that they create. Mm-hmm. But yeah. More generally, as it relates to Ben Breeze, for the most part, most of our customers are using it. They're food waste diverters. They're people who are going to give the food waste to the municipality. And so generally we do, of course, still have customers who are using it in their outdoor compost bin and composters, and who come back and say, how much they appreciate the product. It's really all about where you're applying it and applying it, you know, properly to the material and in a way that it will maintain its dry. The beauty of the formula is really that it won't have any mm-hmm. harm on any insect life, you know, exoskeleton or otherwise, once it's wet and mixed in with the compost. And that means that it doesn't have to, you know, harm any bees or anyone else that might be applying it to their backyard compost, because at the end of the day, it's a fossilized algae and it can harm any insect that has an exoskeleton. And so we want to make sure that we're responsible with it and people are using it properly. It doesn't mean you shouldn't apply it to your outdoor compost bin. It just means you have to be aware of the surrounding environment.
Sure.
And so it will absolutely dehydrate and kill a black soldier fly. It will take a very long time to do so because they're much larger than fruit flies. And it's a mechanical kind of dehydrating action that's actually having this effect. It's not like a chemical pesticide that they can develop any sort of immunity to or anything like that. And so does that sort of answer your question? Is it will help?
Yeah, no. For better or for worse, that yes, that is probably the answer that at least a couple people listening to this will want to know the answer to. So
I would, it's that you know, you could actually apply Binbreeze into food waste that would end up at a black soldier fly farm and without any negative repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to apply Binbreeze fresh onto mm-hmm. food waste the black soldier flies were going to go onto, then it would definitely harm them. So it's a balance. Okay.
And yes, you're right. There is an entire industry dedicated to this and vermiculture and that sort of thing. So yeah, maybe we should pair these people up and they can go into business together.
Yeah, well, we're good with the vermicomposting and the worms too, thankfully. So love worms. I understand why people don't want them in their kitchen though.
So before we move on to our 7 sustainable questions, I want to make sure that everyone knows where they can learn about and get some Binbreeze if they would like to see what the product is like. Head on over to binbreeze.ca. Again, that's binbreeze.ca. After the interview, Taylor and his team let me know that they wanted to give A Sustainable Mind listeners an extra thank you for trying Binbreeze for yourself. So you can use the promo code ASM25, which will get you 25% off your order. And that promo code is just for listeners of this podcast. Again, use the promo code ASM25 for 25% off your order. And if you want to check them out on social media, it is Binbreeze on Instagram, LinkedIn, and on Facebook. So check them out. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back. For years, I've been looking for a way to offset my carbon footprint that was easy to use and that was backed by a company that's transparent about the impact donations have out in the real world. I was so relieved to find out that this actually existed in a company called Wren. Wren is a website where you can calculate your personal carbon footprint based on your lifestyle. So they're going to ask you questions about how many miles you travel per week on all modes of transportation and about your eating habits, especially when it comes to animal products. Then they'll help you offset it by providing resources to help you shift both your mindset and your daily habits. And they also give you an opportunity to fund projects like protecting the rainforest, sequestering CO2, and funding regenerative technology. And the best part, I know exactly what projects I'm helping to fund, and I receive monthly updates on their progress. Signing up for Wren is an easy way to do something meaningful about the climate crisis. It is going to take all of us, so you can help do your part by signing up for Wren. Go to wren.co/ASM, sign up, and they'll be planting 10 extra trees in your name. Again, that's wren.co/ASM. Start making a difference today, thanks to Wren. Today's episode is also sponsored by Wondrium. I just watched Solving for Zero, The Search for Climate Innovation. It's a 10-part companion series to the Solving for Zero documentary, with even more fascinating examples of innovative climate solutions. Now that I work in the green building sector at my day job, I've learned about so many opportunities for cutting emissions through addressing how we go about constructing our buildings and infrastructure. Did you know that making steel and cement accounts for about 10% of all greenhouse gas emissions? I was really excited to learn about a new low-carbon cement that's now being used in the Athletes Village for the 2024 Paris Olympics. And there are so many other amazing solutions featured on Solving for Zero, The Search for Climate Innovation. In addition to amazing documentaries, Wondrium introduces me to new ideas and helps me level up my skills both at home and at work. All of Wondrium's content is world-class and presented by experts in their field. That's why I want you to check out Wondrium today. Wondrium is offering my listeners a free trial plus 20% off the annual plan. All you have to do is head on over to wondrium.com/ASM. Again, that's wondrium.com/ASM. Sign up for Wondrium today. And we are back with Taylor McCartan, the co-founder and CEO of BinBreeze, the world's first non-toxic and all-natural composting powder. So Taylor, we are diving into our seven sustainable questions now. And the first is, do you have any habit that you have taken on for a long duration of time that you feel like has given you the edge in life?
Yeah, you know, the edge in life, I think, is the perfect way to describe this. It's got to be reading recreationally. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, my dad read to me every night until he started getting annoyed that I kept reading ahead of him after he'd gone to bed. And I still read fiction as a way of falling asleep to this day every night. And that muscle enables me to take in much more difficult books that are nonfiction because they are dry or slow, but I've built up that muscle and it helps me stick with it and work with it and have more fun reading. So I think, you know, I think that's really just given me an advantage today in this world of people and peers that don't seem to like books. I don't get it, but.
I love it. So our next question is, do you have a new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now that you want to share?
This one is tough to overshare. I'm recently single and moved to Abbotsford with the company and in a new manufacturing space. And so I'm taking this change in environment as an opportunity to really cultivate new habits in this new environment. I find changes to daily routines much harder when, you know, prompted by the same daily stimuli. And now it doesn't mean that in order to make change, you have to like do as I did. I'm just kind of like seizing the moment. And I've read that if people at home are trying to like build a change, they should move your furniture around because it like makes you, it reminds you constantly that you're this new you.
Yeah.
So to answer the question, new habit I'm cultivating. The big one that I'm really gunning for right now is as soon as I wake up in the morning, I grab a pre-cooled bottle of water from my fridge and I go for a walk. And that's before I have any coffee. And I've done it 3 times. So I mean, I just moved. So I'm still new, but I do believe I'm going to stick with it because it really helps me start the day off right. And, you know, I was listening to another one of your podcasts about, you know, what that daily walk to work can be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not walking to work right now, but I got to find another way to walk, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I mean, it's good to get your day started with movement for sure and water. And if you're doing both simultaneously, then
definitely
more efficient way of getting things done. Right.
Yeah. I crave that cold water in the morning, you know?
So do I. People definitely have their particularities when it comes to like the temperature of the water, you know, the vessel that it's in, yeah. You know, how you like your ice, all of this stuff.
Yeah, I think there's a whole subreddit dedicated to it, actually.
Wow. So. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Don't tell me that too early in the week. I might wind up going down that rabbit hole and not get my work.
It's definitely a waste of time.
So our next question is, whose work do you look up to or whose work do you admire when it comes to the environmental community or even the possibly more narrow focus of your particular industry, which is,
yeah, great question. You know,
food waste or environmental business.
Interesting question. I'm actually going to take a slightly different direction in that I already picked who I wanted to kind of highlight as someone I looked up to in my community. And that person is Dr. Trevor Hancock. And if you're not familiar with him, he helped me understand that climate change was not so much an environmental issue, but a public health issue and ultimately a human rights issue. And he was actually the first candidate for the Green Party of Canada in 1984. And to this day, he makes himself available to the community in Victoria to talk about public health and talk about climate change and still does advocacy. And I know that because I didn't have a clue who the heck he was when I met him at an event. And I guess I was just kind of amazed that someone so large had the time to talk to me. And, you know, he's not going to be around when the climate collapses. He's retired, but he still puts his time in, and he does it because he cares about everybody. And I mean, like, everybody. And, you know, the world grows great when the old plant trees whose shade they will never sit in. And Trevor hasn't stopped planting trees. And so I really wanted to give a shout out to him and the fact that he includes me on his email list.
So. Very cool. Very cool. I will definitely put a link to either his website or that newsletter in the show notes for this episode. Yeah, I don't think that I'd heard that name before. So I'm definitely going to have to check Trevor out.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but he's working extremely hard to make a one planet community a sustainable community on Vancouver Island.
So I'm going to turn this around a little bit in terms of you talked about Trevor being someone that you look up to in your work, and possibly this is the same question or a similar question, but in your work with Ben mm-hmm. Breeze, specifically through whether it's partnerships or like, do you have any stories that you kind of latch onto through your journey so far with building and now marketing this product that kind of stands out for you that you would want to share?
Gosh. Yes. I feel like there's like different stories all the time. You know, we had one customer who told us in tears that her compost bin had ended her marriage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That because it was such an emotional issue, she came home from a trip and the compost bin still hadn't been taken out like 5 days later, and that she said that was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back in her marriage. And I thought, oh my god. And it was also, you know, there were tears in her eyes and we were all just kind of shocked at the farmer's market, but anyway, that one comes to me. And but I think, you know, more generally, I continue to be amazed by the simple fact that I think everyone kind of, and I lived as a younger person in this world where I was powerless and that I was an observer of society. And I've now realized that I'm in fact a participant, and we all are, and we all have an impact whether we like it or not.
Those are quite poignant moments for people. I mean, it's things like that you do remember because it's so, you know, bizarre or really unbelievable. You know, you can't write this stuff. So
yeah,
thank you for absolutely. Sharing.
For sure. I mean, I had several of those moments. Learning about wood as its actual environmental impact was like a life-changing, jaw-dropping experience because of my participation in retrospect in burning wood. And in the same way, it's just like with garbage, when you have that moment where you realize in fact that every piece of garbage you've created still exists somewhere. It can just be shocking because you have to retroactively look at all of your environmental impact to that date. And it's a hard emotional, you know, journey that we all kind of have to step through and come out the other side with a positive attitude. Not everyone does.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I do want to ask specifically about you learning the real impact that wood burning has on the environment. So this next question, I'm going to ask you about that specifically and then in a more general way, but do you have an internet resource that you find helpful on a regular basis that you can share with our listeners? And also, if you can remember back that far or have a current resource for the wood burning specifically that you can share,
yeah,
where people can go to learn about these statistics and the real, you know, impact, lasting impact that this is having, I would be very grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great question, Marjorie. There are a lot of different kind of nonprofits that are working around the space in BC to basically identify all kinds of waste and facilitate connecting that waste to entrepreneurs like myself or like some of your listeners. Hmm. And so, but there's kind of a varied amount. So I don't want to go to, I don't want to throw one particular out there. I think everyone needs to do their own research on that particular topic.
Yeah.
As it relates to wood burning itself, I always encourage people to learn about forestry laws and how it works in British Columbia, because the fact of the matter is forestry companies don't have to remove slash that they don't think that they can sell.
Wait a second. Say that again. Say that again.
Forestry companies, when they cut down a tree, generally about half the tree is waste. It's branches, it's other things, it's wood dust, other, you know, half the tree is waste. A big portion of that gets left on site and a big portion of it is made through processing later on.
Oh, wow.
But okay. They leave these massive piles of slash that even replanters can't plant trees in those areas, and they obviously dry out and exacerbate forest fires. And so a big part of what I'm trying to do with Ben Breeze is not just create a market for the industrial. Again, I think you just need to, like, listeners need to give it a Google. There's a lot of different things out there. For specifically wood waste, there's so much wood waste that I can call right now and I can have, you know, a truckload delivered to my place for free because someone wants to get rid of it. So, and the key is that it's all spread out across different industries in small amounts. And that's why so often burning is the way of disposing it, because the logistics of collecting it are, you know, an added complication. And it can, you know, be disposed in place. But it largely, if there was someone there purchasing it, which is something that I want to create with a market for wood dust that's much broader than just burning, then I think that naturally the market should adjust to that. I mean, I do believe in capitalism. I believe in engines that transform the world, and that corporations are much more powerful than politicians. And that's why I created a company, because it can exist in perpetuity and continue doing this good long after I'm gone. At least that's what kind of motivates me.
Awesome. And
I do want to share a resource, Marjorie, just because I feel like I haven't. Sure. For any founders out there that are also raising capital for their environmental business, I just wanted to mention the Climate Tech VC e-newsletter. It's called Climate Tech VC. It has been immensely helpful. And so when I did write down one internet resource that I found helpful and wanted to share with those, and that's what it was. Hope that's okay.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. And you mentioned earlier that you were an avid reader for recreation. So I will ask you, what book would you recommend for sustainable minds out there, fiction or otherwise, that could be beneficial if they're hoping to change their mindset specifically to become the change that they want to see in the world?
Am I allowed to say Mindset by Carol Dweck?
Sure.
Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not, actually.
Oh my goodness. This book is 100% the book that enabled me to do all of these things. It teaches you scientifically that there is in fact no smart and stupid. There's just experienced and inexperienced. And it radically changed my belief about my own capabilities and my own intelligence and what I was capable of. And it also, it basically just teaches you that the teachers that told you that you were dumb were wrong.
Awesome. So Mindset by Carol Dweck, that's the one.
I actually have every single employee in the company read this when they start.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That is a strong recommendation. Excellent. We'll add that Definitely. To the list of resources for today's episode as well.
Awesome.
So before we end our interview, I would love to just know what general kind of first step advice you would give to any aspiring environmental entrepreneurs or social entrepreneurs that are out there that kind of have an idea, you know, like you talked about earlier, might see a bit of a gap in the market somewhere. What advice would you give them if they're first starting on their journey to creating a solution that can then be brought to market and make a real difference?
Yeah, I mean, not to quote Nike, but definitely just do it is the one that I really push out there a lot. I really think that every entrepreneur needs a bias to action. They need to go out and talk to customers, try stuff, screw it up, get better at it. There's just no way you can create the perfect business plan that will go so well that you never have any stress. Sorry, it doesn't work. You need to actually go out and do the job, not think about it, not to be judgmental. And then more broadly, I think it's important that every eco-entrepreneur understands that when they go out and declare this, you know, new business that they want to create and their willingness to, or their desire to make a better planet, they also need to understand that they are going to come under fire by people in their lives who are threatened by that feeling or that new definition of who you want. Actually, you know, there's a metaphor I like to use, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You know, when one drug addict says to another drug addict, "Hey man, we should stop using drugs," is he wrong? No, the hypocrisy doesn't make him wrong. You should still stop using drugs. And it's the same way with oil and gas and, you know, climate change. Addiction is the great leveler and equalizer of us all. And, you know, ultimately, we're all oil addicts, not because we chose to be addicts. I mean, Marjorie, what was the first oil product in your life you think you used?
Probably something during the birthing process, not to get too detailed, but I mean, I'm sure that in the delivery room, there was something that was petroleum-based that was put on me as a baby.
Wow, you're so sharp. You were thinking even ahead of me. I was thinking of a baby's bottle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that you actually would physically use, sure.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, you're spot on that there was probably, you know, plastic and other products that are there to make the birth more safe, for sure. But anyway, I mean, I always thought that was you're born and your mother's nipple is replaced with a plastic product. Can I say nipple on a podcast?
You can say nipple on this podcast, yeah.
You know, like that's how early the addiction, you know, starts. And so when you tell someone, hey, like I'm trying to drive less, they're immediately thinking, why are they trying to drive less? Is this because of how I'm driving? Mm. Are they saying I shouldn't be driving? What a hypocrite, you know, like, and that becomes very dangerous. And so to take this wrap up, what I'm trying to say here is when I started my company, a lot of my friends were quick to point out like, hey, you haven't lived the most sustainable life. And they were right. You know, I didn't have an electric car and I still don't. And I did, you know, there's all this pressure to make all these personal changes that I have made and continue to make. But that is an iterative process where everyone has to make the changes that are easier and more accessible to them. And you need to create a positive, you know, encouragement around those emotions, not this negative, oh, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. Like, you have to forgive yourself for that small stuff and focus on building up your successes, because you'll never win anyone over with negative emotion like that. And so similarly, I've made dramatic alterations to my life and how my personal impact has on the planet, but I still drive a gas-powered car. And so, you know, and that's how it is. I hope to change that, but that's the world we all live in. So I want any other founder out there who's, you know, about to start an eco venture to understand what they will say when people come at them personally for the changes that they're going to make. You know, be ready to not to attack back, but to humbly acknowledge your own mistakes. And that's the only way that we can get through this, is if we all acknowledge our own, you know, contributions. So
awesome. That's such a great note to end on. I want to make sure that everyone knows how to get in touch with Taylor's team and the Ben Breeze website. Head on over to benbreeze.ca, or if you're in the States, benbreeze.com. It'll take you to the same spot. And of course, Ben Breeze on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and any of your other social media channels. So Taylor, do you want to give any final words or parting pieces of guidance to sustainable minds out there?
Yeah, I want to ask them to please don't stop. Please do it. Please continue. Please push your ideas. You know, we need every single one of you. And don't not follow an idea just because it's not going to solve climate change all at once. We're not looking for solutions that are just going to instantly solve the planetary crisis. That's totally unrealistic. We need everybody around the world, to every one of you who has these ideas, to make that little change that you can. You know, if I thought that, like, am I going to save the world by stopping wood dust burning? No. But if I do that and you do what you do, and, you know, every other environmentalist around the world also is out creating engines and machines that may build a better planet, then we can do this. But it takes everybody, and it definitely takes the belief in small, lots and lots of small solutions that build a better planet for everybody, and not just one thing.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. To learn more about today's guests, head on over to asustainablemind.com and type their name into the search bar, or click the link in the description. Want to support the show? The easiest and most effective way to support us is to leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. This helps the show get in front of more people who are looking for stories just like this one. And if you want to suggest a guest, contribute to the show, or just say hey, head on over to asustainablemind.com/hello to get connected with me and to get involved. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on A Sustainable Mind.